Hey yo, and here we go with another edition of We Talk Wrestling with Addy and Mo. Hey yo, I'm Addy.
Hey yo, I'm Mo, and as I'm sure pretty much everybody out there is aware, we last talked to you on Sunday night, and at the time we said right after Impact Wrestling's latest pay-per-view, No Surrender, and we said we'd be back on Thursday, and that's still our intention, but of course, Jerry the King Lawler live during the broadcast last night of Monday Night Raw suffered a very serious heart attack. And so basically, we understand, we've said this before, we're fans who, we're not wrestling historians or critics or journalists or anything like that. We're fans who we think of as doing a comedy show on wrestling, largely. And, you know, that's basically what we are. And we know that people watch wrestling and listen to our show largely for an escape. And we want to be able to provide that to you on Thursday and talk about Monday Night Raw, which was a good show, and talk about Impact and talk about the SmackDown spoilers and provide that escape to you and have you laugh and do our regular show. But we couldn't do that, of course, with the Jerry the King Lawler thing. So what we've decided to do is to talk about him here now tonight in his own separate show, just a short show, just kind of giving some memories and such on him. And, you know, just kind of commemorate what he's given us and then move on to on Thursday and do our normal show with any updated news that we have on Lawler. Does that sound about right, Addy?
Well, largely that's correct. I mean, the other part of it, of course, is, you know, as critical we've been about Jerry Lawler's commentary, both on the show here recently and in written form, and quite frankly, rightfully so. Right. But Jerry Lawler, you know, is a wrestling legend. And you know, part of it is that we can't provide that escape without hitting this. But the fact of the matter is we really would be not doing a sort of a service if we did sort of brush over that. So we do have to be talking about, you know, about Jerry Lawler and what happened on Raw and just the really the surreal nature of it, because it does, I don't want to say it took the fun away from a largely, you know, a very good, probably, as we said, the best show since going to 3 hours show in terms of what they were going
Raw,
to be
since
presenting.
Raw 1000, you know.
Well, in terms of what they were going to be presenting, and just said to kind of just as Raw seemed to get sidetracked, we're on We Talk Wrestling a little bit sidetracked and going to be talking about Jerry the King Lawler. And you said talk about some memories. I use the term honoring Jerry the King Lawler here tonight, just because you know, I think when I think of memories, you think of someone that just passed away, and Jerry Lawler, of course, is in stable condition and responsive in a Montreal hospital. You know, their last update that we had.
That's right. That's right. That's probably a better way to put it. Yeah, honoring the king. That's what we'll call this one. And as you say, deservedly so. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to take back the criticisms over his commentary. Then again, I'm not going to take back also the great moments that he provided in commentary back when the program was great and he had that great chemistry with JR and all this. But before starting out with some of the memories on him, let's just talk a little bit about what happened last night. For those who aren't who may not know, why don't you kind of give them a kind of a play-by-play as you watched it. You saw it before me. I was on a delay. You were on a bit of a delay too, but I was about 15 minutes behind you, so I was getting texts from you. So why don't you go through kind of the chronologically what happened and what you were thinking as you were seeing it. And, of course, I guess you might even have heard the updates through text or Twitter first or something.
The thing is, up in Canada here, of course, as opposed to Raw being on it at 8 Eastern time, it's on at 9 Eastern time. So we're on an hour delay. So, and generally speaking, what I do is I watch Raw on another hour delay, just because, you know, through commercials and the PVR and such that I can skip through. And so while I've got sort of the PVR on pause, I'm checking out the, you know, the internet, and I'm on the Wrestling Observer website, and it's, you know, Jerry Lawler update. And I went, oh, okay. So I thought maybe, you know, I had a thing with Punk going on, right? So I thought, okay, well, maybe it's just, you know, a storyline deal that, you know, what's happened with Jerry Lawler. So I click it on, and basically what happened is during the primetime players against Team Friendship match, Jerry Lawler, you know, Cohen Lawler, they're calling the action just, you know, like any other match. And you could hear some heavy breathing at times from Jerry Lawler.
I watch it on the computer, and I have my headphones on. So, I mean, his heavy breathing was – that's the first thing I noticed because, it was really loud. It's really – really cut to me when I heard that.
And I guess rewind to this as well. If we're doing a play-by-play or a blow-by-blow, earlier it was a Raw active match where Jerry Lawler, Brodus Clay, or Randy Orton would be facing CM Punk. Orton won the voting. Ziggler gets involved. King makes the save, and it gets turned into a tag team match. So Jerry Lawler Randy Orton faced Dolph Ziggler and CM Punk. I'm going to say about an hour maybe before this happened within the hour of this happening. And then, yeah, as we said, heavy breathing there. And then the commentary kind of goes, it stops. And then Cole kind of chops in, just calling moves, like really just very basic, generic play-by-play with intermittent stops. And the camera's sort of peeling over, and you can see Lawler just hunched over, and I guess he threw up is the thing. But, I mean, he is hunched over looking down, and his headset is off. And then, you know, next thing you know, you can see people in the crowd. And I heard this described to almost like there was a fight in the stands. And that's probably the best example I give is people's necks were craning. Everybody was looking over at Lawler in the crowd.
Yeah, I do think that's also what at least the in-ring performers. I mean, Daniel Bryan was in the ring wrestling at the time. Kane was on the – you could notice that Kane was distracted. He was on the outside the ring waiting for the tag. Daniel Bryan, I don't think, had any idea what was going on in the ring. He was working his match. I don't think Titus O'Neil had any idea until he tagged out. Then I think he got an idea. I'm not sure if Darren Young had it. So it's kind of also strange in that you have the crowd reacting like this. Some of the performers just seem to be assuming it's a fight. And some other ones are highly distracted while trying to – I'm sure they're thinking, what the hell are we supposed to do here? And I guess you would look to the referee for direction there, because they would be getting some sort of direction from the back through their headset, their earpiece, right, telling them, you know, this is how we handle this situation. So,
yeah, and I guess and Cole, they said, kind of goes silent, comes back a little bit, but for the most part, is silent. The EMTs right on the scene there, after he passed out, got Lawler, took him to the back. I mean, you've got a bit of a chant of Jerry as he's getting taken to the back. And then when in the back, Lawler's getting CPR administered to him. He wasn't breathing on his own. And so they're like, quite literally, Lawler owes his life to those EMTs. They're the ones that revived him and brought him back. Like it was quite a serious situation.
Absolutely.
He was on oxygen, taken to a local Montreal hospital. He got an angioplasty procedure performed on him overnight. Was responsive, breathing on his own. Got a CAT scan for both his chest and his head. Again, because he stopped breathing on his own, at this point, what they're doing now is tests to determine how much, if any, brain damage there is to Lawler because of the fact that
he lost oxygen.
He stopped breathing and oxygen to the brain. Yeah, so he could become a booker. But the thing is that it's still, again, a very serious situation and one that said he's not quite out of the woods yet in terms of, I mean, he's going to live. That much is
well, and you know what? We say he's going to live. And the truth is, though, is that Michael Clark Duncan, of course, the actor, most famous from The Green Mile and a big wrestling fan, was at a lot of the events and UFC as well. He suffered a heart attack and never truly recovered from it. It was 6 weeks later that he passed on from the effects of that heart attack, though. So, yeah. I mean, while we say he's going to live, I don't expect him to ever call another match if he does. I mean, I don't think we'll ever see him again.
I think not on commentary.
No, he would come out, maybe give some sort of speech, whatever he's capable of, and wave and get the tribute mm-hmm. that way. We'll likely never see him at ringside again, which even though I have been, and as you said, rightfully so, critical of the commentary, I will miss him there, especially like this. And, you know, I mean, you say that those EMTs saved his life. I'm very grateful for them. Of course, happened in Montreal. In Canada, we have universal health care, and they obviously did a very good job. But it's a bit worrisome. They're going to the hospital, and I know that doctors here, professionals, and do their best. I also know, due to the universal health care, that brain drain occurs, and many of our best surgeons go to the States where there's more money to be made. So obviously, they were in the hands of – he was in the hands of some very skilled surgeons and who have, as you say, stabilized him, and that's I'm very grateful for that. That's very fortunate.
Yeah, I guess to do a wrestling tie-in, the quickest thing that I can say is, fuck you, Lanny Poffo. Universal Healthcare saved Jerry Lawler's life.
That's true. You know what? That's true. Yeah.
And the thing was, is again, Triple H, was running sort of backstage at this point when it's happened.
Quite chaos. Vince was at the gorilla position, correct?
He was at the gorilla position and back and forth, I guess, to Lawler when Lawler was still there. Vince was feeding sort of word for word all the verbiage that Michael Cole was saying, which. I mean, to kind of put this, I said it to you, just how eerie it was for me to hear the first words out of Michael Cole's mouth saying, this is not part of the entertainment tonight.
Yeah.
And the last time I heard that was when Owen Hart died. And, and this is Bret Hart's return to Montreal on Raw from the screw job. And I'm hearing, things are just bringing everything all full circle. I mean, Raw started with, I guess it was something where, you're tearing up, but, you're getting very emotional. And it was sort of, if you want to call them tears, it was both ends of the tear spectrum for me, is that when Bret Hart comes out at the beginning of Raw and he's in Montreal and he's getting that Montreal hero's welcome. And I can feel myself just sort of welling up from emotion, and that this is another piece of closure to me in terms of that whole Montreal angle. Is that this is, as much as Brett came back, and as much as he had that match against Vince, and as much as he's been a sort of not a regular, but been on the shows a few times, this again was another piece of now I'm back in Montreal in a WWF ring for the first time in 15 years, and you never thought you would see it. And he's getting that adulation from those fans who, quite frankly, never thought that they would see him again in this venue. And you're getting that, and so you're starting to well up. And then you get, Michael Cole and just really Michael Cole in tears, saying, get well, Jerry.
My friend.
My friend, yeah. Totally,
And like you say, baby face. Obviously he's a baby face. Vince was feeding him the lines to say. But this was, I don't think I've ever seen the real Michael Cole before. And
no.
I don't think I'll ever look at Michael Cole the same way ever again. And probably in a good way, I do think. He was visibly shaken.
Yeah.
I mean,
as strange as this is to say, he did gain a lot of credibility to last night.
I thought he did a remarkable job. I was highly – I thought the WWE handled it very well in general. They took off the commentary. They just gave a few updates with Cole. Cole, it was, let's say, Vince told him what to say. He said it. He was very honest. He was holding back the emotion. You could see how broken up he was. It was a very real thing. And, Cole also, the way he held it together before they did the announcement, managed to keep calling the matches. He did his job. And again, we're also critical of him. And you know what? The truth is, Michael Cole is not a good wrestling announcer. He is a good but not great sports entertainment announcer. But in this instance, he was a true television professional.
Yes, and I mean his background before coming to WF, he was, you know, like a war correspondent for CBS, I believe. So I mean,
yeah.
he does have that sort of, I don't want to say background of dealing with tragedy or being in difficult places. This is a little bit different because this is someone that is a friend of his and you know, and close to him. But I mean, it's a situation where, you know, he kept somewhat, I mean, as much composure as you can keep, like you said, to continue on. He didn't leave the booth. He was there the whole time. You know, you could see him there with his head down, you know, at times. And like you said, and that emotion from every update in terms of, you know, even towards the end where he's like, just on, Jerry, you can do this, you know, you know, pray for him and all of that. You know, he just, yeah, Cole, when you say, I mean, he Cole has always been, I considered, a passable announcer. You know, when him and Taz were calling the SmackDown 6 and there was a lot of good to call, they were very good calling it because they had a lot of good to call. When things aren't so good, you know, he doesn't elevate a game there. But as I said, I mean, in this very real situation, you know, Michael Cole did as good or better than anybody, you know, could expect.
And you know what, I'll say the same thing. Like I say, I think WWE handled this well. They acknowledged what it was. They allowed the show to continue but didn't make the show bigger than it was. They didn't make the show bigger than the situation.
No.
But and I think, you know, if somebody, like, we know what was happening to Lawler, and we had seen Cole. If somebody just turned on the television and missed all the Cole segments and just watched the matches, other than noticing no commentary, I don't think we can pick it up. We could see in the faces and the body language of the performers how uncomfortable they were and how much was on their mind. I don't think that it was, though, that somebody who wasn't aware of it would have known. I think they did a fine job hiding it, and I think they all did the right thing as far as professionally handling it.
Yeah, I tell you, the guy that, to me, that looked actually the most shook up out of everybody, it's kind of surprising, that was David Otunga. He just, you know, just the look, I think he was on the first match, him and Sheamus.
Yeah, I think
since
so,
it
yeah.
happened, the first no commentating match. And yeah, and so it was seemed to be fresh. And yeah, Otunga looked, to me, the most shook up. And that, I mean, I don't know why it surprised me. Just I would have thought, you know, Brett was the guy that I thought.
Well, I mean,
thought,
Brett says,
you know,
I mean, that's ironic that the most famous feud for Jerry Lawler in his history with the WWE/WWF is easily Bret Hart. And the fact that the guy's not around often, there was here, he was there tonight. But perhaps, I mean, I don't know enough about Otunga. I don't know, perhaps a family member of his passed away from a heart attack and it hits home that way or something along those nature. Or just,
yeah.
you know, who knows what it was.
That's
but,
right.
Or maybe he's just not as good at hiding it. Or
maybe he figures with all the steroids he does, he'll have one.
Yeah, well, no kidding. No kidding.
But and that's the other thing we just
yeah.
Just to mention that, I mean, is like Jerry Lawler, you talk about CM Punk being straight edge. I mean, Jerry Lawler, you know, didn't drink and smoke and do any drugs. I mean, like in his life. And he started his career in about 1970.
That said, he didn't really work out either. He didn't really watch his diet. He didn't really, you know.
No, there is. I mean, there's all sorts of factors, but I mean, again, it's just when you talk about sort of the, you know, the steroids and the drinking and the pills and things that lead to these guys with these, you know, early deaths and enlarged hearts and stuff. Lawler, you know, clean
almost
as
almost 63.
I guess yeah, it was 63. I think almost yeah.
Yeah. No. So, I know what you're saying, though. You're right.
But, and you're right. I mean, he did enjoy his flag football or softball and things like that. But, not a weightlifter or a cardio guy or anything. Yeah.
No. And that's the other thing. You mentioned Owen Hart. The incident to me this reminds me of is mispronounce the name almost for sure. Was it Mitsuhara Misawa? Who died?
Misawa.
Yeah, Misawa. Pretty much, you would probably call him the equivalent in Japan to about what The Rock was here.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, or maybe Ric Flair is actually probably.
I was going to say Ric Flair is going to be
a better comparison, or Shawn Michaels, something like that. you know. And he died in the ring after taking a back suplex, and he was, I believe, in his mid-40s at a show in a tag match, and he took a back suplex, bellied a back suplex, and passed away there in the ring. And that's different than the Owen thing, because the Owen thing was an accident that never should have happened. This was almost something that you couldn't see coming, and same with this Lawler thing. And so that was where I was kind of going with it, but
Owen was a stunt, and Lawler again. I mean, and who knows if it has anything to do? I mean, he wrestled in Aruba over the weekend, had a couple matches in Aruba, so it was coming from Aruba, flying into Montreal, then on Monday. So he did work over the weekend as well. So I mean, and again, you got to think. I mean, not to to be critical of the people of Aruba, but I would think a Montreal hospital would be a little bit more equipped than one in Aruba.
Yeah, again.
So you know, or at the very least, if not, if the hospitals are equal, an indie show in Aruba versus a WWE,
nobody would have been on hand. Nobody would have been there quick enough. Exactly. He would not be with us right now.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the sad part is, he probably wouldn't be with us right now. So, I mean, it's timing-wise, I mean, that's...
if something terrible is going to happen, at least it happened in the right place at the right time where he appears to be, hopefully he will be able to get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one that's, and again, it's
bearing, convalescing. Bearing, like I say, brain damage and bearing...
it's just all we can say, you know, is hopefully he does get well, get better, that the brain damage is minimal. Like you said, I wouldn't foresee him ever being back in a commentary position, at least not full time. I mean, I could, if he is better, I could see him WrestleMania match.
It depends on whether or not there is the brain damage and whether or not it causes any sort of, difficulty in his speech and that type of thing. If there is, I mean, we're not going to have a fucking Dick Clark situation going on here. I mean, Vince just won't put up with that, right? I mean, look at Bobby Heenan, you know, so.
No, that's right.
You know.
But I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I don't think it's full time. I mean, who knows what, you know, if William Regal gets a spot or if it's Josh Matthews and Cole for a time. I mean, who knows?
Well, the man that should come in here is for more than one reason, for numerous reasons, I could say, is JR.
I guess so. Yeah. If you're going to do,
that's one of the ways to honor him. He's the best still. Lots of reasons. I think it would provide some comfort to the fans. Just numerous reasons. JR is, Lawler is apparently there tonight in Ottawa where they're taping SmackDown, doing the commentary. A little surprised by that. I meant Cole. Sorry.
Okay, yeah. And then, I mean, that doesn't really
surprise me a little bit. Apparently, when he came out, he got some boos, but significantly less than what he normally gets. I'm not sure who's there with him, but...
I mean, that doesn't overly surprise me. But, I mean, on SmackDown, it was him and Matthews, right? Yeah. So that was the team there. So, I mean, I don't know if that necessarily surprises me so much, and that, I mean, like, you just think of, you know, it was again, go back to Owen, you know, and the next night on Raw you had JR and King there. I mean, so you got a little bit of time to get over it. Yes, it's a very close friend of yours, but you know, you get through doing 2 hours of show.
That was a one-time tribute show where, I mean, I don't know what they're doing tonight. I don't know if they're paying some sort of tribute. I don't imagine they will be. I imagine
I don't think
they're
going to
push
the
storylines, right? And I think that's a different thing to have to do. This did create news all across the world. Basically, every news outlet picked this up. It was, you know, big deal. It hits the wrestling community, I think, hard. Those who wrestle, those who book, those like us who are just fans or do a podcast. So, I mean, I know I could not sleep. Like, I literally, I tossed and turned until about 1 in the morning. I woke up about 4:30 in the morning I was thinking of Lawler when I went to bed. I was thinking of Lawler as soon as I got up, and I've been thinking about him all day. It's really stuck with me, and it does that with me. I can only imagine what it's like for the people in the back, people having to perform SmackDown tonight. So,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, it's – yeah, and that's the whole thing is sort of what the – be interesting to see kind of the tone of the SmackDown show. Again, both Raw and SmackDown, I mean, these are go-home shows for the, you know, the Night of Champions pay-per-view. So, I mean, you've got sort of generally speaking that – those issues to push, and hell, they're creating the card as we go here. So, I mean,
they just added another match like a half hour ago, a new match, you know. And
well, they added, it seemed like they had added Cody Rhodes, and that was going to be the story, but of course, without the commentary, you know, that was again, and you gotta, I mean, you give them obviously the pass for that, but that's, you know, seemingly added Cody Rhodes to the Misery, right? Mysterio. Now it's a four-way, yeah. Sure, but that was sort of the thing there. That I mean, when Cody did attack the Miz, really was kind of a shock because that match not announced, and who knows if it was going to be before or not, or talked about during. I mean, who knows? But I mean, that's kind of all beside the point. I don't know. I mean, that's really all the information that we have in terms of the current situation. We want to talk about maybe some of our Jerry Lawler memories.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess I said or moments.
Where's the
I
first
guess.
Time you personally? Where's the first time you ever heard of Jerry Lawler? Do you remember?
Well, I was going to say the first time I ever heard of Jerry Lawler was in an Aptor bag, and that was when he was suing the WWF for the King of Wrestling name. Mm-hmm. And he had the lawsuit because they had Harley Race and Haku and things like that. And so Jerry Lawler was suing the WWF for it. And that was the first time that I ever saw a picture of him. I guess he used to have a Memphis talk show or was on a Memphis talk show and talking about it. So I remember it was him basically sitting on a picture of him kind of sitting on a chair. I didn't have a crown. I think he was holding the crown in his hand, but was sitting in one of those like Good Morning America type, you know, sofa chair things, talking to whoever. And that was the photo. And that was the first time that I ever heard of Jerry Lawler. The first time I ever saw Jerry Lawler was when he come on Superstars. Mm-hmm. And as a commentator, and the commentary team, and this was 1992, the commentary team was Vince McMahon, Jerry Lawler making his debut, and Bobby Heenan were the three people on this particular show that were there. And it was late 92 because Mr. Perfect turned face. Bret Hart was a WWF champion because I remember Bret Hart doing an interview and Bobby Heenan interrupted him and said, if the, you know, the left one doesn't get you, the right one will. Let me introduce you to the left one. And it was Ric Flair come out, cut a promo. Now let me introduce you to the right one. And it was Razor Ramon. Mm-hmm. And they were about to double team him and Mr. Perfect made the save.
That's right.
And King and Vince were doing the commentary. So how about you?
The first time I actually ever heard of him, the first time I ever heard of him would have been in an Aptor magazine as well. Actually, a little bit different. It would have been somebody who wrote in a fan letter because the Honky Tonk Man had just gone to the WWF, and Honky Tonk Man, I was following his career because he had just come from Stampede Wrestling, and I'd been watching him there for many, many years, and he was North American champion, and he'd jumped ship to the WWF. And anytime a guy who – and I thought of him as a local guy married to a local woman and everything – I thought of him as, you know, I wanted to see him succeed.
Beautiful woman.
I wanted to see him succeed, and somebody and wrote in this letter into the Aptor magazine just slamming the hell out of him, saying, oh, they obviously wanted to bring in Jerry Lawler. He's using all the same moves. He even used the fist drop off the top rope as his finisher. Mm-hmm. He's obviously wanted to bring in Lawler, couldn't get Lawler, so they brought in this joke to replace him. Of course, this joke is actually his real life cousin.
His cousin,
yeah. It's just kind of ironic, and I of course didn't know that at the time. That's the first time I heard of Lawler. And then of course we would read about him beat Kurt Hennig for the AWA championship near the end of the AWA run. Just shortly before they closed their doors, and I started reading about all the people he had beat, how he beat Hogan and how he beat Flair, and how he'd, you know, but first time I physically saw him was I saw a clip from the Letterman appearance with Andy Kaufman. And I had no idea who he was. You know, I'm watching this. And to this day, that incident still seems, even though it wasn't, still seems so bloody real. And I'm watching it. And I thought that was real and everything else in wrestling I knew was fake, but that was real. And like you say, it still seems that way. And then, as you say, also, he showed up in WWE. My first thought was, oh, my God, this is Jerry Lawler. He's the guy with Andy Kaufman, former AWA champion. What the hell is he doing being a commentator? Shouldn't he be wrestling? Well, he was soon enough.
Well, he was and he wasn't. I mean, again, Jerry Lawler was never see, when you talk about him coming in, and he was a commentator. And I mean, you talk about
he always was a commentator, you're right. He never did like a 300 dates a year, 250 dates a year schedule as a wrestler for the WWE.
And he was always, you know, kind of in that Bobby Heenan comedy mold of the heel comedy announcers. So I don't want to say, I mean, and you think of it now, I mean, really when he wrestled in that 90s era, in that sort of mid-90s new WWF generation era, he never had, at least in terms of the mass WWF audience, he never really had any wrestling credibility.
No, he absolutely didn't. You know, I remember even just the way he worked as a heel was not designed to make him seem like he was a good wrestler, but more like a guy who was an overbearing, annoying guy who laughed at his, who told lots of jokes and laughed at his own jokes. That he wanted
A loud mouth that couldn't back it up.
They say, I mean, that's the thing. That he was always telling jokes, obviously prepared jokes, and laughing at his own jokes. And that was the thing that got me. And again, I keep on going, this guy's a world champion. This guy's, like, he didn't, his character was completely redefined. And the funny thing is, while he was, and he was one of probably, right from day one, he got great heel heat and was a top heel, both as a commentator or in his feud with Bret Hart, obviously, because Bret was, you know, a huge star of the company. Meanwhile, back in Memphis, he always was, and still was even during this era, just a massive babyface star.
Well, he wasn't always a massive babyface.
That's true. His first 4 years in the business, he wasn't.
But in terms of, and he did do some heel turns in and out as well.
Yeah, not
but,
many.
I mean, not many, but you're right. When he did the thing where he, even though he was a heel on WWF, he was still the local Memphis babyface. And I mean, it's funny that you talk about him feuding with Bret Hart, and that is his most memorable WWF feud. I mean, it really is, I don't want to say his only feud, but his most major feud. The thing is that Lawler in Bret
well,
in,
Bret even referenced it at one point that it lasted years, like near the end.
But
we've been going back and forth on this for years, Lawler.
Well, and he even said on Raw on Monday, you know, I've had my own issue with Jerry Lawler, and that's what I laughed about, because he said, but Jerry Lawler never ran from a fight. He always showed up. There was that SummerSlam where he put Doink in instead, remember? That was like the first thing I thought of. I'm like, SummerSlam 93, put in Doink. He did run.
Right, but I understand what he's saying then.
And he had a stroke. But I mean, the thing is, and I mean, it's not a thing. It was just kind of funny. But I mean, you look at his feud with Bret Hart, and to what Bret Hart was to Canada and Calgary, Jerry Lawler is that to Memphis.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just he is when you talk about he is one of the top 10 probably stars of wrestling in the 1980s.
And you know what? He's probably top five territory stars of all time.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, when you look at, you know, you have your Hogan, your Flairs, you know, you had your Harts up here, you know, you had guys that were all in the different pockets, and Lawler definitely in that. And you talk about like the UWA, USWA, CWA kind of combo deal here in Memphis. You know, that lasted when all the other territories were dying out. I mean, Lawler and you know, say Channel 5 in Memphis and you know, and that show, you know, was going prime. You watch Memphis Heat, and I mean that show lasted longer really than any other territory
that
was out there. And I mean, you talk about it getting a, or what was it, something ridiculous, like it got like a 69 rating or something, or a 69 share.
Yeah,
or something.
Like a 60 share or something.
60% of the televisions, you know, watching television in Memphis were watching that wrestling show every morning. Yeah. I mean, just, or every Saturday, you know, just crazy.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that's the thing. I mean, we talk about his most famous WWF, WWE program, and he worked with WWF here for 20 years. But it doesn't matter. His most famous, what he's going to go down and be known for forever, what he is known for and will always be his most famous thing, is the Andy Kaufman deal. Because that yes. was huge, and because the Letterman thing was huge, and the press that it got across. And, I mean, I remember, I mean, if you haven't seen it, he was in the Man on the Moon movie with Jim Carrey playing Andy Kaufman, and you kind of get some inside stuff and a history of – a good way to watch a history of that. And it's a good movie. Nobody saw it, as Lawler himself would joke. But, you know, good movie. That's where I kind of got interested a little bit more in the feud. And I went back and I watched those matches and I watched the actual feud. And Kaufman was great. He had no athletic ability, but understood the psychology of being a heel. And Lawler yes. was such a great babyface. And let me tell you, you talk about the unbelievable reaction Bret Hart got. I'm telling you, it's nothing compared to what the heat that was in this building when Lawler was wrestling Kaufman. I've never seen anything like it. The heat was through the roof.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And it just, you had your, and you add to that Lance Russell with his, you know, I don't want to say very sportscaster, newscaster like commentary, you know, where, you know, just really getting over so you can, he's not loud. He's not overbearing type announcer like a Vince McMahon say would be. So you could really hear and understand and feel the crowd emotion on the television, even back in 1982 when, you know, the video and audio technology not as great as it is here now. You know, what did we say? I mean, 30 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. You yeah, know? Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, he's known for that. He was a great promo this way. I put on the when we did our promo show recently, I put on the promo that Nick Bockwinkel wrote or did on him. But he also did a great promo on Bockwinkel. And, you know, I'm talking about he was a great promo, and he had the punch. He threw a great worked punch. One of the
yes.
top worked punches of all time. And that was the majority of his offense, and why not? It looked so damn great. That's all he needed. And he knew the psychology of how to put together a match and how to play the crowd.
And you talk about his promos, too. The thing with Jerry Lawler is, you know, what's about Mike? I mean, Jerry Lawler always was a very genuine promo. And I think that's what kind of – he got lost in that comedy WWF, you know, era that when he come on there with the, like you said, with the forced jokes and everything. Like, you go back and you watch Jerry Lawler in Memphis. I mean, see, he would have his jokes at times, but I mean, there were a lot of times where he'd just be sitting back and it'd almost be like you could put a beer in front of him and Lance Russell and they'd be just bellied up to a bar having this promo.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, you know, with just the crack smile and the joke or the, you know, well, I got to tell you, I'm just gonna beat this guy, don't I? I mean, he's just been, you know, he's been but causing havoc.
He needed to go serious. He knew how to, and how to totally turn that crowd and totally get the point across. Again, the psychology of how to sell the match when he needed to.
I mean, he's just. I mean, it's. What would you say is your personal favorite memory of Jerry Lawler?
Oh, it probably is. Now that I've gone back and watched it, probably is that Kaufman stuff. It's just really is. It really is the epitome of how to get heat in the 80s and draw money in the 80s and entertain the crowd in the 80s. It's really as perfect as it can be. I mean, like I say, it's a non-wrestler against a champion, and yet the way they did it. I mean, that's probably my favorite stuff. I mean, there's not a lot like the other feud that I think of in the WWF. Besides the Bret Hart one, like I say, that lasted years, was the feud with Jake Roberts.
Yeah,
it's my other feud that I go. That's the one that I think of when I think of Lawler in the WWF. Little moments like him entering the Royal Rumble, being
it. I was going to say That's my moment there. It takes a king.
Well, tell everybody about it. Explain it. It's so awesome.
Well, I mean, Jerry Lawler, a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble is doing commentary on the, I want to say it's the 96 Rumble.
I think 96, yeah. Yeah, because it's the same one where Austin won with Bret Hart. And, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing commentary and all of a sudden he goes, you want to see the next competitor? He's hyping up the next guy. Oh, next guy's, great. You want to see the next guy? And of course his music plays and he goes, let me tell you, Vince, let me tell you, McMahon, it takes a king. And he throws, he takes his headset off. He walks into the ring and Bret Hart immediately punches him and he takes like a flip back bump, lands right on his feet, got all loopy, goes right back, sits in the commentary booth, puts the headset back on and goes, to Noah King.
In and out in about a half a second. But that wasn't even, to me, the best part. The best part was, as he's on commentary for the rest of the match, what happens?
He doesn't remember going in.
It was so funny.
He lasted long about as you. What are you talking about?
I wasn't in this match. That was so great. It really was.
He did another rumble. He did the Jimmy Hart spot where he hit under the ring. Yes. And I think it was actually Jake the Snake with Damien that actually probably started the whole feud. Is it Jake had no Revelations was the snake that got Jerry Lawler, out, chased him back into the ring or whatever it was, I can't think. I don't really think of any other.
Well, let's talk about feuds that really of significance. No, let's talk about him and in the Attitude Era as a commentator. Like I say, he and Ross had great chemistry, and there was a period where they were great together. And then his act kind of got old, kind of got stale. He stuck to the same thing. He stuck to puppies too much, and he stuck to. But there was a period.
And Latino Heat that kind of.
But there was a period where when they were just really on and he wasn't so much doing shtick and just during that Attitude Era, they were great.
Well, I don't want to, again, we're honoring Jerry Lawler, so we'll get too much into that, in term. But, I mean, really, when he got into it, the role best suited for Lawler is the role that he had in that kind of that Canada-US type feud where, it was and with Steve Austin and Bret Hart, because what you had the three-man booth of Vince McMahon, JR, and the King. And, JR was pro of both of them, really, Austin and Bret.
Well, probably he leaned more towards Bret.
He did. Yeah. And Lawler, of course, having the feud over years, was anti-Bret.
And then the third person in that whole mix was HBK, who was kind of Vince's guy.
Yeah, well, there was that, too. But then also Vince was always talking about how bitter Bret was, and JR was always sticking up for him, and Lawler was just continuing with his character, saying, yeah, that damn Bret or whatever, right? But I guess the other thing we should mention about Jerry Lawler before we got to – well, he did have all those Stu Hart and Ellen Hart jokes, but
it
I mean –
he would tell jokes about Stu Hart, Bret's dad being so old, and Stu's mom or Bret's mom, Helen, being so old, and really disrespectful, horrible jokes, and you're like, man, this – and then you found out later on that they both loved it,
especially
Stu, just loved this.
Oh yeah, well, and the thing was, I was gonna say was the King's Court.
Yes.
Where you had you had Piper's Pit, then you had the Brother in Love, and then really the next thing you had then, your odd little thing like the Heartbreak Hotel, but really that King's Court stretched, 3 or 4 years. With Jerry Lawler and his talk show.
His feud with Piper, which I think ended, I think it was in 1995. His feud with Piper is probably 1994 King of the Ring? Yeah, you're right, 94. Because that was
Art Donovan called it.
Yeah, that's right. That was where Bret and Diesel had that match. That's probably his other significant feud that you think of within the WWE. And then he's had little mini things like with The Miz and such here recently, but...
And when he called Gold Dust queer.
Yes, there was that. There was that.
And then the ECW
stuff, which largely wasn't on WWE, but certainly interesting. Tell everybody a little bit about that.
Well, what it was, I mean, in reality, what it was a feud. WWF had, again, I don't want to, really the first developmental territory that they had was the USWA in Memphis. You know, you had guys like, Papa Shango and Owen Hart, and Bret Hart would go down there, and, you know, and Mo and Mabel would, you know, the Men on the Mission would go down there, and you know, Kamala and Riz, any, they had guys going in and out when maybe they weren't on TV or maybe just as guest appearances and such. In the USWA. In fact, the other one there was of course, in the rise of ECW. And really what this was the USWA and ECW had somewhat of an interpromotional feud going on.
Those were all the rage back then, right? Thanks to the NWO.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And it kind of got some play with Jerry Lawler being on the WWF, and then ECW got to plug their first ever pay-per-view on, I think it was Living Dangerously, I want to say it was, on the WWF on Monday Night Raw. And I remember, I mean, from our end of things, this is when we were watching on that bar in Canyon Meadows.
Yeah.
In February of 97, yep. Or in 97, when we were watching Raw on a giant TV in a bar where we're the only people in the bar. And
which is why the bartender who didn't want to watch it had to acquiesce to us and give us the rights to watch it, because really, how's he going to kick out his only customers? And then he ended up liking it but didn't want to admit it.
Yes, exactly. But he knew who everybody was. And but then, so ECW come on Raw, and Jerry Lawler invited them. And it was from the Manhattan Center, and Jerry Lawler's like, get these idiots. And that ended up, they had a debate, and they had, you know, Taz coming out and Dreamer coming out and getting in Lawler's face, and Lawler calling it extremely crappy wrestling and from a behind the scenes perspective, I don't know that even Lawler was privy to the fact that Paul Heyman and ECW was on the WWF payroll.
I don't think he was, and he legitimately did not like Heyman or the ECW product. He literally, when he's saying it's crappy wrestling, he thought it was garbage wrestling. He didn't like the product. And that part was a shoot. Same thing. He did come on ECW television at one point, and you know, where he was free to drop a few profanities about what he thought about the product,
and he brought Cornette with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when Cornette hit. I think it was Cornette that hit Tommy Dreamer in the nuts with his tennis racket, and his like balls swelled up to the size of grapefruits, pal.
Yeah.
Like literally,
yeah.
He had to go to the hospital. But they had this wild brawl there, and Lawler brought out Mr. Monday Night Rob Van Dam to jump from ECW to the WWF.
Yeah.
And he was sort of teamed with Lawler and was hooked on with Lawler, and this was a guy that thought he was too good for ECW to come over to the WWF, and they had debates, all I said on TV and things like that. And I remember Lawler always saying, "And why Vince McMahon allows you to plug your stinking pay per view on Raw, I'll never know."
Yeah.
Well, I guess he will ever know, because again, they were on the payroll. But and part of it, you know, I think from Lawler not knowing that it's on the payroll is going, you know, like why don't we do this for the USWA?
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. You know, I think there's some jealousy there. Absolutely.
Probably. Of course, the USWA wasn't on pay per view, but
no.
Let's go there. I mean, we're bouncing around a little bit, but I mean, Heyman come from Memphis as well. And I remember there's that line that they open every round table.
Well,
on
King,
WWE
and you have to keep in mind, King. I mean, King became a wrestler because he was a disc jockey who showed great charisma and and had good, not bad size, decent enough size, and showed great charisma. And a promoter brought him in Memphis up. Decided to train him, and it was just supposed to be a lark, supposed to be a short-term thing, just a gimmick thing for a little while, but he had an affinity for it. But keep in mind, Lawler was raised in Cleveland.
Well, Lawler, I mean, we'll look at and Lawler, raised in Cleveland, over to Memphis. I mean, the way that Lawler got into wrestling is that he was always a fan, and he was, and in especially in the of Memphis Wrestling and Jackie Fargo and such. And Jackie Fargo did a radio show as well on the same as Lawler. And Lawler had asked a guy, and Lawler went into one of the to the Underground shows.
Yeah.
One of the Black Ball shows. And that's where they said, you know, how many matches you had to, like, just say, like, 18 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, just make up a weird number, but you know. And so that's how we got. He got really no training other than hands-on training in this
Underground. And yet, a year after he debuts, he's already, you know, getting championship belts and territories because, you know.
Well, yeah. They did say it was a very natural addict.
Yeah. And what were you going to say about him in USWA and ECW? Was there something else you were going to add in there? You were talking about Heyman was also from Memphis.
Well, there was a couple of things there. No, it was just that Heyman's not from
Memphis. Not from Memphis. No, he's from New York, of course.
Went through the USWA, but there is that clip that they play on, they said on the Classics on Demand on the Red Legends Roundtable. They're like, you know, did you break his jaw by accident or was it on purpose? Waller, of course, always looks at it and goes, it was on purpose, and in reference to a punch that he made to Paulie Dangerously on a show in Memphis at the Nashville Fairgrounds there. But the thing, I don't know, it's Fairgrounds, but the thing was, the other part of it was it's about USWA and how with you know, under Lawler's influence and how that really shaped a little bit of what would become a turning point in wrestling history. But that's where Vince McMahon first went down and was Mr. McMahon.
That's true. That's where the heel Vince McMahon debuted. Everybody talks about how if Montreal doesn't happen, the Mr. McMahon character never happens, and he's, you know, we never see that character. But he was already doing that character down there.
Yeah, down where? He just needed an excuse. He needed a reason to use the character.
And
he
was going to go towards that anyways. You saw that with the hockey brawl with him and Brett, and it was going to happen anyways.
It was, and I think that was more, I think, Russo talking about getting a boss involved and Vince being able to do it.
And it was even more likely to happen once Eric became a character. Eric Bischoff became a character over in WCW as well.
Vince saying, yeah, I can do this much better, and he could.
Yeah.
But that's where that character first, you know, saw the light of day,
yeah,
I guess,
exactly.
For lack of a better word, right? So
that's true. And I think it was something like 32 times that he was the champion down there. CWA, USWA would lose it and win it back. Nobody else ever really, I don't think, beat anybody for the title. He always would get the win back.
Do you remember? And it was like 1997 or 98, and I remember I had that PWI almanac.
Yeah, I remember it.
And we just
I think I might still have that.
I was going to say you might still have that.
I'm pretty sure.
And we'd go through the title histories, and we'd, you know, try to quiz each other back then on who the champions were, and it's like, and then we'd open up to the Memphis stuff, and it was like Lawler, Dundee, Lawler, Dundee, Lawler, you know, Tojo Yamamoto, Lawler, you know, Jeff Jarrett, Lawler, Dutch Mantel. Lawler,
yeah, exactly.
You name it. It was Lawler this guy, Lawler this guy. And then there was like the odd time where it was like three guys, then Lawler.
Exactly. It's unbelievable. So,
but again, that's these the face of that territory, sure. And of that city.
I don't know. Other than maybe the Sheik in Detroit his day. I'm not sure that anybody else is as entrenched in their territory, even a Hearts or something like that, as he was. Like, he, you know.
Well, the Hearts may be, but it was always, you know, we would see Bruce Hart and Owen Hart and Bret Hart at different times, you know. But this is one man, you know, like maybe a Dusty in Florida.
Yeah, right? Maybe, yeah.
But, you know, the Von Erichs, again, were different Von Erichs, yeah. That were there. But, yeah, it's. I mean, there was guys like, you know, there's the Crusher and such. I mean, that was territorial wrestling, but Jerry Lawler, Dusty and like the Sheik, had that longevity, in there.
That's really it. Yeah, that's the thing. So
and but some of the things that he come up with too, I mean, just the music videos and yeah. things like that, where you know, using those, and again, that's with the DJing background, and I mean, that's how he saw the Gentrys play.
Yeah,
and you know, and that's how Jimmy Hart gets involved in wrestling. I mean, it's you know, it's a lot, everything that Lawler really contributed to wrestling. You know, definitely, you know, whether, again, announcing in the last, say, you know, 10 years or not, 15 years or not, I mean, what Lawler contributed to wrestling. I mean, that Andy Kaufman on Letterman angle still gets play in that top 100 television
absolutely.
Moments of all
and time. And you know what? A lot of people to this day, even though Lawler said it was a work, even though the movies come out, still believe it's real. And they always will. Yeah. And that's because they were so goddamn good.
I'm pretty sure Paul Schaefer is one of them.
Probably. Yeah. It was quite a moment. It's something. It's just unforgettable. So,
but I mean, it is. And again, I mean, it's to kind of. I don't know if how much more that really have to cover.
I think that's pretty much it. I mean. Yeah, I'm just going to go out myself. I'm Mo at We Talk Podcast and Mo_WeTalk on Twitter. Yeah. There's no E in my name, just M-O. And I don't really have anything else to add. I just, like I said, I was thinking about going to bed. I was thinking about getting up. I thought about them multiple times during the day today. And whatever it is that you do for support or get best wishes, if it's, I don't care if it's, you know, just warm wishes or thoughts or prayers or meditation or write a letter or whatever it is. I know for me, it's doing this podcast. So hopefully, you know, just do whatever you can to send the positive energy in the way of Jerry the King Lawler and long live the king. Oh, you
meditation. Jerry Lawler. Home. That's something that Andy Kaufman would do, actually.
That's pretty much true.
Would meditate. But, no, I said, I mean, just to kind of pull it to.
I was wondering, because I was looking at you and you had this little grin on. I was like, what the. Why can't he let this nice little thing that I just said just fly and lie? Why can't he just do that? Instead, I just knew you were going to do some douchebag moment. Because you're.
Yeah. That's true. That's me. It's me. CAWDIE, but I just want to bring it back full circle again. I mean, it's we've had a lot of good memories of Lawler. Again, it's just sort of that the warm wishes, the get well soon to the king. You know, sort of thoughts and prayers are with
Long?
Jerry Lawler and his family. You know, it's, I mean, you think about him and his you know, his son Brian Christopher, who we didn't mention. You know, part of that that whole angle with you know, Grandmaster Sexay of Too Cool,
yeah, back who of course showed up in the WWE in the Attitude Era, and they kept on mentioning how that was his son, and he would deny it, but not deny it. You know,
no, well, who? No. What the how that happened was, and I remember this very vividly in a 1997 summer of 1997 Raw.
Yeah.
To build on that, what that did is they had Chris Candido for representing ECW on Raw, and Brian Christopher representing the USWA on Raw, and Vince saying or King or it was Jim Ross and Vince McMahon as the commentary, and they were joined by Paul Heyman.
Yeah,
and
that's
and
right.
They were talking about it, and Vince goes, oh, what do you think about Brian Christopher? And Heyman goes, oh, he's a very, you know, serviceable opponent for Chris Candido. Chris Candido skipped out of the WWF and joined ECW. And JR goes, oh, come on, Paul. What are you really thinking? He goes, you want me to shoot? You want me to ruin Raw again? This man is Jerry Lawler's son.
That's right.
And that's when Lawler come out of the back. And they got into a brawl. But that is how the whole Jerry's kid and how that was revealed to the WWF audience.
Well, that was how it was revealed, because they had hinted at it many times earlier. Like, Jerry, well, he looks an awful lot like you. No, he doesn't. you know, stuff like that.
Well, they did that after.
No, I thought they did that
before. They did that after. Because, no, they didn't do it before because Brian Christopher was representing the USWA at that point and hadn't come over because they hadn't had the light heavyweight tournament yet.
Oh, that's right. That yeah, you're right. Fall.
And so it was coming up that next, that's when they started to say, oh, it's a lot like you. And then they'd go, and they, yeah, they would tease that for, God, for years, yeah. Even on the, you know, even the, well, any relative of Lawler. I mean, they teased that with the honky tonk, yeah, exactly. Too. You know, they'd say, oh, could you imagine being that guy's cousin? You know, like
yeah,
stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Long, right?
Exactly. That's so. Right. But there was a period, and those two don't get along very well. There was a period where Honky Tonk Man joined him on commentary for a little while. That was something something else to do. So,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of great moments. Like I say, a lot of great moments. So I'm going to just once again say, if you want to do get well cards, prayers, meditation, hey, look, whatever. Oh, you just,
no, I
am like I say. I'm done for tonight on this.
I think I think it just get well wish the king. I said I just went on that kind of tangent when I thought about his son there, but we didn't talk about him. But I think again this is I guess the We Talk Wrestling honoring Jerry Lawler show again. Addie at WeTalkWrestling.com. You know, send an email with your favorite memories of Jerry Lawler moments. Again, something that we can read over the next, coming episodes as we do some things here too. Because I don't know that, as I said, it's going to be, from all accounts, a road of recovery here for the Kings. So it is something that, you know, we're going to be looking at probably some constant updates over the next weeks and possibly months even, kind of updating the status of Jerry Lawler. So, you know, listen, Addie at WeTalkWrestling.com. Send your emails. We'd love to read other people's favorite moments on the air. Again, sitting up here in Calgary, not seeing a lot of that Lawler influence from, say, maybe the Southern United States or in other places as well, Minnesota, things like that. So love to get other perspectives as well. So that's gonna, again, that's gonna do it for this, you know, sort of impromptu edition of We Talk Wrestling. So in the meantime and in between time, that's it, another edition of We Talk Wrestling. Good night, folks. Puppies.
The Hitman distracted Jerry Lawler up there with
you're
the Hitman's parents.
Anybody understand what he said? Could you mumble a little louder there? What?
Where were you when he...
Is this your wife here, Helen? I just wanted to come down and meet the couple that produced more tragedies than Shakespeare. I've never seen anything like it. How many kids do you have? The what?
Self-appointed king of the ring.
Anybody understand what he's saying? I got a clue. Why don't you put your false teeth in backward and eat yourself to death? See him? Flat on his back? Yeah, he's easy to recognize. He's the one that's getting his brains beat up. No, I take that back. You got to have a brain first. I wanted to ask you about when Brett the Hitman was a little boy. I understand that when he was born, Stu Hart had to try to collect on his accident insurance. Is that true?
You know, it's got to be.
I understand that when he was a little kid, he was so ugly that for the first 6 months you diapered the wrong end. Is that true?
Can you imagine the strength?
Miss Hart certainly knows what a loser looks like. She's sitting next to one. She's been married for... Hey, I'll bet when you two were young, the Dead Sea was only sick. Is that true?
Oh.
Hey, look at Stu over here. He's got those baseball eyes. Two baggers. And I heard the other day...
What else did they do?
That old Stu Hart was stealing his own brand. And he sort of got that little special gleam in his eye. And Helen looked over at him, and then she realized it was just the sunlight reflecting off his bifocals. And had you ever seen Helen Hart, Bret Hart's mother? I'm not going to say she's old, but she's the only person that I know that has an autographed copy of the Bible. Now listen, she ought to be used to this little feud that's going on between her two boys, Bret and Owen, because I understand that when Cain killed Abel, Helen was on the jury. As a matter of fact, I heard that he was such an ugly baby that he had to have tinted windows on his incubator.
matter is that he's so scared, he's been biting his fingernails so much his stomach needs a manicure, because he knows that Monday night at SummerSlam, he's going to be laying flat on his back, and he's going to look out in that audience, and there's going to be his decrepit old father, and his wrinkled up old mother, and his illiterate little brother, and they're going to be sitting there saying, Brett, you've let the Hart family down, you've been beaten, you've been humiliated, you've been embarrassed by the real king of the World Wrestling Federation, me!
Ladies and gentlemen,
what happened? I'm going to tell you what happened if you shut up. A little old blue-haired lady who should have had her license revoked about 50 years ago pulled out in front of me, and she caused about a 10-car pileup.
Must have been Helen Hart.
The woman that I have as a guest this week spent 3 hours today in the beauty shop. And that was just to get an estimate.
Oh, boy.
The last time I saw a face like hers, it was in a bag of oats.
Funny as last week.
Let me ask you a question, a London Blade. How many pecans have you cured? Rowdy Roddy Piper, the guy with a 7-Eleven mouth that was open 24 hours a day, he would stand out here and try to tell everybody how tough he was, all the while he was wearing a dress. You love it. You know, they say ignorance is bliss. Meet Miss Happy right here.
Now, Crosby, I'm surprised they even let you wrestle anyway, Jake. When you sweat, you're a fire hazard.
Over there, say it.
I can't believe you're talking. Your breath is bleaching my hair. Double feature here. Yeah, here. Let Jake call the action. He's so drunk he's stumbling over his own words. He can't do it, can he? Huh? You and your buddy Tiny Tim were so bobbed when you got off that plane in Philadelphia. You couldn't even walk to get your baggage. They had to send a cart for you. And then you cart-checked the cart.
What?
Yeah, Tiny Tim was driving, and there was Jake riding shotgun, giving him directions. They ran over 40 or 50 people. Stop it. Go ahead and tell him you got a ticket for aiding and abetting a DUI. You know, the only thing I can say in Jake's favor now, at least he doesn't drink and drive anymore. Ow!
He's
afraid he might hit a bump and spill his drink. People like you are supposed to turn the other cheek, right?
Yeah.
Let's see if you turn the other cheek.
Wait just a minute.
Hey, maybe he is. He did turn the other cheek. Let's see how the other cheek does, huh?
Instead of going on TV and telling everybody about your past drug problems, why don't you write one of those tell-all autobiographies? Write one of those big books, right, Howard Finkel? You know what you can entitle it? It could be called Who the Hell's Gonna Buy This? I got Jake Roberts. Tag team partner right here.
Oh, no. Oh, unbelievable.
Oh, Jim B. And when I get through with you.
Alex. Coming up. He's struck with his victory. Look at this.
Six. Listen up. The amateur in Cleveland, huh? What about the Ravens? I got a lot of things here for Jake Roberts tonight. I brought his two tag team partners. Jim B. Maybe Jack Daniels, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, like I said,
what a
great sense of humor.
These are just for Jake the Snake. You know, there's all kinds of celebrities here tonight.
Sick sense of humor.
I understand Jake the Snake Roberts' wife is in the audience somewhere here tonight.
Oh, boy, we don't have to go there.
Look for her. She'll be real ugly. I'm telling you, she's ugly, but Jake said nothing that a light switch and a six-pack won't cure. Where is she?
That's bad. That's bad.
The only reason he married her was because he had kisses sweeter than wine.
He's going to regret these comments.
Let me tell you something. Hey. Hey, Mark Henry.
Uh-oh.
You think you can lift these? Huh? Oh, Jake sure can. Why don't you sit there? Hey, Mark Henry, you were at the Olympics, right? Huh?
Obviously.
I don't see any medals. Do you see any medals hanging around his neck?
Mark Henry was hurt.
Hey, don't worry about it. You can look at Mark Henry and tell that if he won a gold medal, he'd just take it and have it bronzed.
Oh, my goodness.
Here, set these right over there. So just set them right there in front of McMahon. And McMahon, don't you drink any of this.
Not a chance.
One of these days,
now,
somebody's going to have to.
Somebody give Jake the Snake Roberts
mouth.
A bar stool and let him use it as a walker and let him stagger out here. And the first thing I'm going to do you all a favor. I'm going to knock him down horizontal so you'll recognize him.
Oh, the king's full of himself.
I thought you know, Jake's had it. He's been a little under the weather. He's got barthritis. That's where you're stiff in a different joint every night. Hold it there, Jake. Nobody said last call. I know you've got something in that bag of yours that I don't like. But I brought a bag myself. Now, I got something in my bag that you If you don't take out what you got in your bag, I will take out what I got in mine, okay?
Jerry the King Lawler trying to talk his way out of this match. It's not going to happen.
Like he's Monty Hall now making a deal.
But what does he have in the bag?
Not a snake.
Oh, no.
Not unless he gets in it.
Well, Mark, you don't like snakes either, huh?
No, no, I can't say that because, oh, my God.
Oh, no, look out.
I've never liked snakes.
Look at Jake.
I've never seen a bottle that
but I like
before.
Jake Roberts.
Yeah, Jake wants to take a big slug off of it. Look at him. Oh, it's driving him crazy not having it.
Well, it's humiliating. It's embarrassing. Jake Roberts.
I didn't do anything. Can't you? Isn't it obvious? Can't you tell what's wrong with him, referee? Something wrong with his throat? His throat's dry. He needs a drink.
Oh, wait a minute.
That's all.
Oh, no. That...
Jake needs another drink.
That would be utterly humiliating. Jake Roberts' small children are in attendance tonight.
And this is what he did to Aldo Montoya not long ago. Like, he's not going to do this to Jake.
Oh, my goodness.
God. And that's raw. That's raw booze. He's dumping down Jake's throat. Look at this.
Well, Jake's off the wagon now for sure. Might as well make a night of it now, Jake.
Oh, come on. This is no time for humor. A recovered alcoholic being dosed.
Yes.
A covered alcoholic.
This is not even. This is raw.
One more.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you hear what Jake said? He wants to know if anybody's got a beer for a chaser.
Let him have a double.
Patiently to lock up with Jerry the King Lawler.
And Vince McMahon.
What?
This is great.
Oh! I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Turnbuckle there. Now, Al, got a little thin in hair there. You might could use some Rogaine with Minoxidil. Am I going to do your job, too? I know right now your parents are somewhere in Texarkana watching, right? I bet they thought that you were really going to make them proud tonight. I guarantee you right now your old man's on the phone trying to call a lawyer to see if he can find a loophole in your birth certificate.
How dare him? The King.
They said he's a boxer. One of the best boxers in the country. Too bad all his fights are in the city.
King's not one of those.
I know these idiots look like
they're
from another planet, but there ain't nobody with pointy ears that's going to come out here and save you. And if you're not careful, I will boldly send you where no man's ever been, courtesy of my fist.
And he calls himself the bad guy. Oh, yeah. Big deal. The only thing bad about this guy is his hair. It's got more oil in it than my car has. Been to the barber to get an oil change lately? And now, Milwaukee! You bunch of losers!
Uh-oh. Got that right.
Just like your baseball team, the Milwaukee Brewers, you're a bunch of losers! But let me tell you something. The name should explain it. The name says it all. The Brewers, they're all drunk.
Oh, my goodness.
And I bet that's what you people do all the time. Look at this guy. Hey, I bet a big night for you is to get all sassed up and go out and pet the farm animals in it, huh? Oh, no. Take a look. Can you see this guy? See him? I saw him a while ago back in the bathroom. He was getting a drink of water. And then the seatbelt hit him on the head.
Oh, my goodness. The King is not ingratiating himself.
Is that your face or did your neck throw up?
Oh, take this. He speaks the truth.
You people are disgusting. You're pathetic. Hey! Look at her! Nice to see you off the streets for a change. What's the matter? Strip club's closed tonight?
Woo! I think we just need to apologize.
Look at Burger King. I think you made one too many trips there, haven't you?
On behalf of the...
Hey, when you wear blue, do people try to mail letters at you?
Well, Jerry the King, Lawler.
Oh, my goodness. look at these two. Take a good look at her face.
Oh, do I have
It's girls like you that turn men into, well, people like Goldust.
It's got that right, too.
All I want to tell you something.
Is he the Henny Youngman or the WWE?
You are, without a doubt, the most pathetic bunch of losers that I have ever seen in my entire life. And you don't deserve to be graced by royalty like me. But you know what? I still presented him that portrait. I framed the Ultimate Warrior. And when you frame a picture, the only thing left to do with it is hang it. And that's what the king is going to do to the warrior tonight. When I get through with his face, he'll look like a Picasso painting.